There are a lot of true crime podcasts out there, and I have 30 seconds to convince you why you should check out Crime Lines. Crime Lines is one of those shows that just lays it all out there. The backstory, the legal context, and details of cases you haven't heard before. If you hear about a true crime case and want to know what happened and why, you're my kind of listener. You can check out Crime Lines wherever you get your podcasts. That's Crime Lines, one word, and get ready to dive deep.
Warning. This episode contains foul language and very cute baby sounds.
Weirdos, you are listening to Keep It Weird, the podcast for all things strange, unusual, paranormal, supernatural, creepy, sticky, gross, scary, and everything in between. Each week, we sit down with a very special guest and we talk about something weird. And this week is extra great and extra special because my sister is in town.
Yay!
And baby Wilder is here. And we are talking appropriately about creepy children. Mm-hmm. Why are kids so creepy? Why are some kiddos randomly violent? What are the best scary children's movies? And more. Fasten your Pampers cruisers and let's play. My name is Lauren, and this is my lovely co-host, Ashley.
Hi, weirdos. Hi.
Hi. Hi. And the guest today is the beautiful, lovely, talented, wonderful, badass mama, my sister, Julia.
Hi, weirdos.
You've heard her name.
Many
Now
times.
You've heard her
I'm
voice.
I'm finally here.
She's finally made it
yes.
to Los Angeles, to sunny Los Angeles, California. For
She's
the
here.
First time, just kidding. She's been here multiple
right.
times.
but this is the best.
But this is the best because there's a tiny little goober
there's
here.
There's a tiny human
Oh, wait.
Here.
We're going to have to be specific now when we say tiny goober.
Oh, yeah. Because Gabby was the goober
yeah,
before.
Yeah, Gabby's a goober and Wilder's a goober.
Wilder's a goober. He's pushing out a poop right
yeah,
now. So you're going to hear some
you
sounds,
hear some...
maybe. some coos.
As we all do.
Yeah.
We
hear some coos. Yeah, we thought it would be appropriate to, you know, we knew Julia was coming out here and we were like, well, what should we talk about? And Julia was like, anything. I love weird stuff. And I was like, well, wouldn't it be great if we talked about creepy ass kids?
Yes.
Now we have so many. Yes. I'm the only one in the room that doesn't have my own. But Gabby counts.
Gabby
I was just
going
to say Gabby counts.
Because
she's your creepy
she
child.
Takes, yeah, she needs special care. And it's like having a child and...
She's just up she's on her throne right now looking over us. looking
she's
over
a
the
sweet
world.
Bear.
We love her.
Wilder wasn't sure what to think of my apartment, I think.
Yep.
Like
he
when he finally
around.
Opened his eyes, he was like, "What the fuck is going on here?"
Very concerned. There's lots
so
of things happening.
So many things in here that I'm not sure about.
High stimulation in this apartment.
Including two jungle cats.
Two jungle cats that stare him down yeah. while he sits in his car seat.
We'll post a picture of that later.
The cats meeting him. It's so cute.
Yeah, it was very sweet. Julia, you have had some experiences with your daughter, Josie.
I have.
And we've told a few on the show before, but do you have a like abbreviated history of like the strangeness that's happened with her?
I can't remember... Lauren's a way better historian than I am, but when
no.
I was pregnant, I feel like some stuff was going on when we were getting her room together, but I can't remember. That's my mom brain, like turning to mush. But she, so I just showed Ashley and Lauren actually a video
yeah.
of her putting a blanket over her head and like
yes.
in her crib that I saw on the monitor, and she wants to play peekaboo with someone or like hide and go seek, or she's reaching for someone, and then she just sits there with a blanket over her head in her crib like not doing anything, and that's almost more terrifying
yeah
like,
than playing peekaboo with a stranger
yeah. But I would say when my husband and I both heard a voice on the monitor, we were downstairs, she was upstairs sleeping. And we both heard Josie and looked at each other because he usually is like, you're crazy. there's nothing, like, right. I don't ever hear anything.
I don't see anything. I don't feel right. anything.
What are you it's talking about? Here. And we yeah. both looked at each other and I was like, did you hear that? And we always say that it's his late father who's doing it, but this was a woman's voice. And
so that kind of throws that theory out the window a yes. little bit.
And then recently, the rocking chair.
Oh, the rocking chair.
Yeah. I was holding her and she was staring at the rocking chair in her room and was like, who's that? Who's that? And like wouldn't get in the rocking chair. And that's like her favorite place to sit. And she was just staring at it. And I was like, oh my God,
someone's in the rocker.
Yeah. And then just always, I feel like I can hear someone in the house to the point where I'm like, Alex, or I just or I know, Alex, or someone's breaking into yeah, my house.
Or Alex, you need to go check.
Right. Because right. I can hear someone walking around or opening a door, and he's always right by me. My cat's always on the bed when it happens with us. So
do your cats ever react to anything in your apartment? I mean, house. You don't live in LA. Tig. You don't need an apartment.
Yeah, you're a normal person living in a house.
You're an adult. You have a house.
More than one bedroom.
Yep.
Not Tig. I guess when we first moved into the house, he would, and no, yeah, even the apartment we lived in, he would like stare at the ceiling, stare behind us, and then run. But cats do that.
But cats are kind of weird.
But yeah. We always thought he'd like follow something on the ceiling, get really scared, which he's a flat faced cat, so I think it was just goobers in his eyeballs. And he thought he was seeing something.
He was like, wait, hold on a minute.
I see something going back and forth.
What is that?
Eye crusties.
It's getting my own eye booger.
Yes, which is completely possible.
So does she play peekaboo like that with you?
No.
That's even fucking weirder.
Yeah,
no. She doesn't play it like that with you, and then she just like starts doing it in her crib right. by herself.
We always weird. Use our hands, and we actually haven't played it since she like was one. Now she's going to be two in July. Like, she's kind of grown out of that
yeah,
game.
Yeah, it's a pretty baby game.
And even when we did, it was with our hands. And so.
And at the beginning of the video, it looked like she was reaching for someone, right?
Yeah, like she, like almost like Marco Polo.
Yeah, where she like covers
with
her,
a blanket over yeah. her head, like feeling covers for someone,
puts a blanket over her head, and then she's like feeling around yeah. like for whoever's
Where's
there.
My buddy? Wow. Oh gosh, creepy kids,
Josie. Yep.
Kids are scary.
Yeah, I mean, creepy kids are. I mean, there's a ton. I don't think no one did anything on like Black Eyed Children or anything, right?
No.
Okay, we've that's a really popular. Before, yeah, we've yeah. talked about that before. I feel like every paranormal podcast has an episode on Black Eyed Children, right. So we're not going to talk about that today. I can give you a reference for another
yeah.
podcast Go that talks about it if you want me to. Fine. But no, today I'm talking about the belief that children have sixth sense, the psychic powers of children.
Sensitive.
Sensitive, if you will. Good word. Good word, Lauren.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, by the way, listeners, are you excited that Lauren's here right now, even though we said she wasn't going to be here for a while, and all of a sudden she's fucking back like a liar?
I'll see you in like June, and here I am in April. Which is episode
we made
probably
such a big deal like I know, two episodes like, ago. It's like it's our
maternity
last
leave
episode.
And
like,
I here I am.
And she's here.
Guys, I can't stay Couldn't away for stay long. Away. I could have podcasted from the hospital. I've been ready to come back.
Yeah, she has.
Yeah, I was emotional even the last day we recorded because I was like, when will I ever be back?
And turns out
everything's fine.
3 weeks.
It's great. Slightly dramatic.
3 weeks from now. Shorter than Christmas break. Okay. So I did most of my research through books that I've acquired throughout my years of collecting occult literature. One book that I particularly love is called The Psychic Power of Children. It's by Cassandra Eason. And this is one of my most prized occult book possessions. I love this book so much.
I feel
much.
Like I need to read that.
It's you so do. Good.
Yes, like, you do especially.
On the way home on the plane.
Right.
Like tonight.
Like, take it. So Cassandra Eason set out to research the book after her own son had a premonition of her husband getting in an accident on his motorcycle. Mm. So it was 9 a.m. on a Sunday morning. And at the time, she had 4 children and her youngest one was teething. So this woman did not sleep at the time. And her husband, who was a journalist, was on the road. And her 2.5-year-old, whose name was Jack,
Jack.
They were like at the breakfast table eating, and her 2.5-year-old son said out of nowhere, "Daddy's gone poly boys on his motorbike, but he's all right."
He's gone what?
Poly boys. So poly boys was the expression that she used with him when she rolled him around on the floor when she was dressing him.
Oh.
She's British.
Oh.
So she would say poly boys. We're going poly boys.
Oh my gosh.
So that's what she would say when she would roll him around.
Rolling him around. That's really cute.
So all of a sudden out of nowhere, they're having breakfast and he's like, "Daddy's gone poly boys on his motorcycle, but it's okay. He's all right." She literally said, she was like, "My son could have told me the world was ending. And at that moment, I'd be like, that's great, honey. Finish your Cheerios. I'm so tired."
Right.
Yeah. So she like didn't pay attention. She was like, "Okay, cool.
Okay, bye."
And her husband was going to be home in half an hour. So she like didn't think much of it. And then he didn't come home. He didn't come home till like about an hour later. And of course, then she was worried because he was supposed to be home. He hadn't called. And when he finally pulled up, he pulled up and his bike was all banged up. And she ran out and he was like, "Honey." And she was like, "I know. Jack already told me."
Oh, my God.
And he was like, "What?" And
that
it turns
so
out, like,
weird.
At the exact moment that Jack had said that about going poly boys, he had hit a slick patch of oil and his bike flipped.
Rolled.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
so,
man.
After that, she was like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah. Right.
She said that her son had never shown any trace of otherworldliness in any way. So she started to question herself and whether or not she was remembering things correctly. Right. She started to, like, if she had been remembering things correctly, was it all just a coincidence? Mm-hmm. But then he did it again 3 years later.
Oh, my gosh.
Same thing, an accident. So he was playing with his Legos. And he told his mom, basically, like, "Daddy is okay, but he was hit by a big car on a stiff road near an office where there was a tower where people went up and down." So Cassandra was like,
really specific.
"What the fuck? Like, are you
serious?
Like, what is that?
What do you want me to do with this?"
He also said that Daddy didn't fall off the bike.
Oh my gosh.
So she called her husband and asked, like, if he made it to work okay. And he was like, "Absolutely, I made it to work just fine." She was like, "Did everyone else?" Because I think he said the daddy and not daddy.
Oh, okay.
So she was like, "Did everyone else make it to work okay?" Thinking
right.
Maybe he was thinking, saw another daddy. Like, someone, he was still young. So, like, he didn't, you know, daddies. Mm-hmm.
Daddies look alike.
Yeah.
Look alike. They're all the same.
Yeah. Right.
But no one had gotten in an accident. So she kind of let it go. She questioned Jack more about the crash, but he was really uncooperative. He just kept saying, you know, like, you already know what I'm telling you. And she was like, I don't. And he kept referencing the stiff road, and she was like, I don't know what a stiff road is. So anyways, 3 weeks later, in November of 1988, her husband was driving back from London. He was going about 70 miles an hour, and he noticed a bunch of cars slowing down ahead of him, so he decelerated to like match their speed, but the butcher's van behind him did not and crashed into the back of his bike.
Ooh.
He managed to not fall off the bike.
No
which,
way.
By the way, he told it was literally like a 1 in a million chance that he didn't get thrown.
Yeah.
Just thrown off the front of his bike. So now Cassandra was like, okay, hold up.
Right.
Because what? My son predicted 2 accidents.
This is insanity.
That's a little weird.
Yes.
And
oh my God.
She did kind of say, like, don't get ahead of yourself. Like, there are a ton of accidents on that, like, that same stretch of highway, you know, every month. It's not crazy that his father had been in a couple, but it is crazy that he had been in 2 and her son had predicted them within a week or within like a month of them happening. One was the day of and one was 3 weeks before.
Right.
That's kind of crazy.
Yes.
But she couldn't find any building on a map that could be seen as a tower with people going up and down. And she couldn't ever get out of him what he meant by a stiff road. Like,
right.
Stiff road, did that mean like stopped traffic stiff? Or like... But he
what did stiff road
yeah,
mean?
What does it mean?
But when you're that young,
he's
like,
6.
Who knows what that
yeah,
means?
And the thing is, by the time it happened, like by the time he got in the accident, Jack had already forgotten. He was like, I don't fucking know.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I've got other things to do. I've played with Legos so many times since then.
Which to me is even more genuine.
Yeah.
That he wasn't trying to keep going with it or like.
Right. Like it was some imaginary thing.
Yeah. He's just like, what?
He was just like, yeah, what are you talking about?
Oh, did I mention that? Okay.
Did I say that? Great. I don't know. See, okay?
You all right?
Do I still have a dad? Great. So Cassandra, after that, became very interested. And Cassandra was, she's spiritualist. Okay. And she believes in like guardian angels and stuff like that. Uh-huh. But this was the experience that had her set out to write this particular book. But she became very interested in the theory that children have abilities that extend past the five senses, mm-hmm. abilities that they themselves aren't even aware of and honestly could care less about. Because most kids that seem to have this ability or, you know, show these kind of skills don't care.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're not doing it like, watch me predict the future.
It's just part of their life.
Say it and then they're like, what?
I'm going to go play.
I got things to do.
Cheerios.
Cheerios, please. So during the research into this book, she talks to several families, actually like 100 families who have had experiences with their children they can't explain. She talks with child psychiatrists, scientists, psychics, historians, priests, you name it. Like she covers mm-hmm. all of her bases. Mm-hmm. One of the things she learned when talking to historians is that throughout history, children have been traditionally regarded as having second sight, like throughout human history, which I didn't know.
I didn't know that.
Until the mid-19th century, young boys would travel around Europe interpreting crystal ball and scrying for their masters.
Oh, wow.
And especially in ancient Greece, young boys were used specifically for scrying, which we've talked about that on the show before. Scrying is basically like looking into a reflective surface and like telling the future. So right. In Greece, it was like still water and like...
Doesn't have to be a crystal ball.
No. Like anything reflective. And like torches. Right. Like that's how they did it. And then in the 18th century, a magician and adventurer Cagliostro often used young children to help him predict the future or perform acts of clairvoyance.
So this
has been a thing throughout history. I had no idea.
Kids are magical.
Kids are magic. It seems a lot of the time with children, the psychic link is to loved ones and not like no children's like 9/11 was an inside job.
Right.
Like
conspiracy theorists, children.
Yeah, they don't predict like big events. It seems like it's a connection that they have specifically with someone they're really close to, like their mom or their dad or someone who's already passed, like maybe Alex's dad. Exactly.
My Alex.
Your Alex. Isn't that weird? They both married Alex's. We actually talked about that on,
right?
I think, the first episode.
That's maybe. Crazy in and of itself.
Yeah, it's a little, weird.
Not really that weird.
No, because it'd be weird if it was like, going to say, it'd be weird if it was like, we both married a Leopold. Right. It's like, you found the two Leopolds left.
The two Leopolds.
And you both married them. That's interesting. That's like twins that are like, I want to marry another set of twins. And it's like,
should you? Should you, though?
Is that what we want?
I'm not into it. Is that what we want for our lives?
Is that what we want with our lives?
No.
So, like, Jack's link was to his father, who he completely adored. And then I actually have this other story. This is someone you might know. Sir Peter Scott. He was a naturalist, a painter, and a sailor. And he told a story about when he was a child, and this was told to him by his mother, who was a complete skeptic when it came to anything paranormal. She didn't believe in any of this, that he knew when he was young, very small, the moment that his own father died. His dad, Captain Scott, had died in the Antarctic in his quest to reach the South Pole. And Sir Peter Scott said to his mother, "Daddy's stopped working now."
Oh my gosh.
And she didn't know what that meant, but 6 months later, their frozen bodies were found and they had been dead for about 6 months. Pretty much like right around the time he said, Daddy stopped working now. Ugh. But this is actually a fun fact. So Sir Peter's mother's name was Kathleen Bruce, and she was the sculptress who created the famous Peter Pan statue in Kensington Gardens.
Hey. We hunted that down about when we were there.
Really?
Yeah,
we were creepily obsessed with the Peter Pan movie in like 2000.
The one with Jeremy Sumpter. Three? Yeah.
Jeremy Sumpter is like the cute little boy with blonde hair.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
He was Peter Pan, and what's his toes, who played Lucius Malfoy, was Hook. Mm-hmm. I forget that actor's name.
Jason Isaacs.
Yes, someone's probably screaming it at us right now, but yes. And we were obsessed with that movie. So when we went to London with our family, we were like, we have to find this statue.
And when we found it, by the way, it's hours. Like the most unimpressive piece of art in the really world.
Wasn't. It really wasn't that special.
Sorry, maybe Kathleen.
I know. Yeah. Other people might love it. We were jet lagged also, so that could have been it.
That was it.
That was it. Yeah, totally. Kathleen, you did a really good job on that Peter Pan set.
Yes,
you're dead,
you did.
So, but if you're you listening did. From the afterlife. She was the sculptor who created that famous statue because J.M. Barrie was Peter Scott's godfather. So actually, there is evidence that shows that Captain Scott was actually probably thinking about his wife and son around the time that his son was like saying, Daddy, stop working right now. Because Captain Scott actually wrote to J.M. Barrie around that time and said, I want you to help take care of my widow and son.
Oh my gosh.
So was his son just connecting to him subconsciously, and that's why he said, Daddy stopped working right now? Or did he know that his dad passed away? Like, so that's the
either
kind
way
of thing that she looks at in this book. Is it like a psychic ability to be able to see what's happening, or is it a connection with
just feeling
other people?
The connection, yeah. Oh man, it's nutty either
how
way.
How old was the kid?
It didn't say actually.
Okay.
He just said
just
when
wondered.
I was a child.
Okay. Old enough to say that.
Old enough to say Daddy stopped working now. Yeah. So on this idea of children having a psychic connection to parents, she was able to get some amazing stories from places like the National Childbirth Trust and the La Leche Breastfeeding League. Not at all the sort of people you'd expect to come out with paranormal stories, but they knew exactly what she was talking about, especially in terms of the psychic connection between a baby and its mother.
Yes.
And like the way that, for example, with newborn babies, especially if you have like an older child in the house too, mothers can sleep through the older child cry.
Oh.
But not through the newborn's cry.
Interesting.
And they think that it could have to do with the fact that like that psychic connection is still so strong. Like
right.
It hasn't actually separated yet.
Yeah.
Because it's so fresh, like
right.
He was just
they
a part
just
of you.
Left
yeah.
You.
And it most of the time, and there's actually been sleep studies done on this. This isn't just like, I know it happened, because like it's hard to tell what happens when you're sleeping.
Uh-huh.
But there's actually been sleep studies that mothers of newborns wake up before their child starts crying.
Mm. I believe that.
I believe that too.
So they wake
100%.
Up
and then
the kid starts
he
crying.
Starts, yeah.
Because there's like a
that.
Weird
you just
connection.
Know.
Yeah.
Yep.
And this bond beyond our normal understanding between mother and baby have even like, you know, they've saved child's lives before.
Right.
Where like the mom's like, I know something's wrong. I have
and
to go
check.
To my baby.
Yeah.
And then something is actually wrong. And there's no way that they could have known.
No.
Mama, I get it. Wild.
I
will
it.
Say there are times where I like wake up just during the night and I look at the monitor and I'm like, I'm not gonna lay back down yet, because I just know she's gonna start crying, and then it's like and, like I didn't even want to put my head back down
because you knew
I just knew, even though she's laying there sleeping,
right?
Like I woke up and I'm like, yep, this is it, like
yep, this is happening.
Yeah,
I can
right.
feel it.
I yeah,
mom intuition is so strong.
Yes. Well, it seems like the tie between mother and child seems to fade as the child grows up, but sometimes even as adults we may send out a mental distress signal that our mothers pick up on. You've heard it a million times, and maybe it's even happened to you, how like mom will call at a moment where you like really need your mom.
Yes.
And she won't even know why. Mm-hmm. She's just like, I just thought I should call you. And it's like, how did you know you call me?
That's definitely happened.
Right? So
yes.
It does seem like that tie is
it's
still
real.
There somehow, whether it's strong or not. So Cassandra sets out to interview as many people as she can. She describes them as ordinary people with ordinary children who sometimes have out of the ordinary things happen to them. During the course of the book, she constantly references how difficult it is to scientifically study psychic abilities. And that's something that I've always been interested in too, because there's so many people that claim to be psychics and have that ability. And there's many people that have claimed to, like myself, who have had instances where you've had a psychic experience or you've had that connection to your child. Right. And you have scientists saying, like, absolutely not. It's fake. And it's like, well, it's not.
Because I'm telling you this happened.
So, like,
I can't prove what it. Is it? But it happened.
It happened. Yes. It's very difficult to prove it because you can't use the scientific method. Hmm. Being able to repeat the same thing and get the same result.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can test.
That's so true.
You can test, like, people who claim to be, like, professional psychics in that way. But, like, you can't test someone like me who's, like, I've had several dreams before.
And then the dream
or I've had several experiences. But it's, like, I can't control it.
Right.
So it's, like, how are you going to repeat that? Oh.
Yes, sir.
That was a belch.
Yes, belch.
So, yeah. So LaCroix how are you going to repeat that test?
It makes it quite difficult.
Yeah. And especially children. So she talks about the well-known psychic test. Do you know what Zener cards are?
No.
Okay. You remember in Ghostbusters when Peter Venkman has the cards and there's like a squiggly line, a star, a heart shape, and the students are trying to guess what the shape is?
Yes.
Of course, he's doing it completely wrong because he's just telling the hot girl that she's getting him right and she's buzzing the guy who's getting him wrong. But... that's Zener cards, and that's like kind of like the well-known test for psychic abilities.
Gotcha.
And there's like a deck of 100. There's 25 of each. And the thing is, though, is that you can't get a child to sit down and like actively participate in that for 100 cards worth.
Right.
Like, what
Who
do you think this
down
is?
For
It'd be
that.
Like
yeah.
three cards, and they'd be like, okay, can we go outside now? Like, even if they are psychic, like, they don't give a shit. That's
like, I'm
going
to go play. Excuse me.
Exactly. So to be able to expect that a normal child would be able to even do one round of this test without getting bored is ridiculous. And another reason that it's hard to test people on psychic abilities, specifically those in which it seems like there's a mental connection but with another person, is because they happen during times of stress.
Mm.
So I guess you could test it in a super like unethical way by like putting the sender in like some sort of distress and then like
situation.
Having the receiver say what they, but like that's like,
so
how are you going to do that?
It's so sad.
I mean, I'm sure like in the 70s, the United States government did that.
Did those things. 100%.
We'll find out when they release those records. But
yeah, we'll talk about it on here.
But there are conflicting beliefs about this. Scientists claim that children are just picking up on signals from those around them.
Hmm.
Like, for example, many children have predicted the deaths of their fathers at war. In fact, psychic abilities have noted a significant increase during war times. And scientists would say that this is because the children are already worried about their parents and they're just voicing their concerns. And it's a coincidence that it lines up with an actual death.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, I guess. But I don't know how many kids are going around being like, dad's dead.
Right.
Yeah.
Who's
and then he is.
That?
You know
and
what
then
I mean?
He actually is. Yes.
You'd have to like you'd have to write down like everything a child says and compare it. Like, did the child say that their dad was dead and the dad survived?
Right.
But no one writes that down.
No one is
because
recording
no
that.
No one
who's
cares.
Doing that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or, for example, there are stories about parents knowing when their kids have been hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one woman who dreamt of her daughter being in an overturned car in a ditch and finding out the next day her father's truck had flipped over and they were all rushed to the ER.
Oh,
shoot. But the thing is like they were traveling cross country. So she was already like, it's not crazy to think that she had dreamt of a car accident.
Yeah. She was thinking about those things. She was worrying about
stuff.
Her child.
So it's just not testable. So all of the like evidence towards children having psychic abilities or like the special sixth sense, it's all just, you know, if we were to take it to court, it's all just like coincidental, I guess. Is that the word? When it's not like hard evidence?
Circumstantial.
That's why we
Way
have
to
you
go,
here
Julia.
Today.
I know.
We're
just
dummies.
Hold the baby.
Hold the baby and give us
and
the
come
words.
Up with some words.
Give us some vocabulary.
I am the person screaming at the podcast in my car. And I'm like, it's this actress. How does Lauren not know that?
I know. It's always like someone I know so
and
well.
And it's, of
too.
Course, when you're on recording a podcast.
Oh,
goodness.
Well, I always brag about how well-behaved he is, and he's screaming his head off our first time back recording.
It's because babies know.
They know.
Just know.
Yep. They're like, Mom's trying to do something.
Mom's trying to do work. Yell. No, I mean, I even, when I start editing, I'll be editing, and I'll be like, Room Raiders.
Yeah.
It was freaking Room Raiders.
That was the funniest text I've ever gotten. We recorded an episode recently. We were trying to remember the awful / best show Room Raiders on MTV.
Oh my gosh.
And Ashley texted me like 4 days after we recorded just saying Room Raiders in caps lock with no other context. And I knew exactly. Like, yep.
Yeah.
That was it. That was the show. That was it.
I forgot about that show.
Yes.
It's great.
Do you guys remember the show after you said Room Raiders? Then I went on like a rabbit hole, like digging of old MTV shows. Do you guys remember Next?
Yeah.
Where like all the guys would be on a bus and they'd come out, and if she thought he was hideous, she'd just go Next, and he'd have to get back on the bus.
A guy from our high school was on that. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Oh, wait.
Who lives edit out that here? Out. Oh. Yeah, I was like,
no names. ZN.
ZN.
I just shouted it out because I got excited. Yeah, he got nexted, didn't he?
He did.
Yes.
Indeed.
Indeed, he did.
Well, yeah, because you could like go on a date and then like even like halfway through the date be like, oh, you have an unhealthy relationship with your mother. Next. But I always loved it when they like just walk off the bus and they're like, nope, next.
Those were like, my favorite. So brutal. Like,
oh, Jesus. Geez. I need to rethink everything.
Was it my hair?
I need to redo my whole life.
Okay. This story's kind of bananas.
I'm excited.
So the ability doesn't always come during moments of duress. That's just kind of like the most popular time that people have had accounts of this kind of thing.
Sure.
But there was a story told to Cassandra from a woman named Doris. Doris was, she changed her name for the story, but we're going to call her Doris.
I like Doris.
I do too. That's a really nice
name. It's a nice name.
Sounds like a grandmother.
Yes. Kind old lady.
Yeah. Yep.
Sorry, Doris. No, definitely. Because this starts out in 1964.
Oh, so, yeah. She's a Doris.
Doris said that once in 1964, she was waiting for a train in Manchester with her 4-year-old daughter on the way to see her mother. Her daughter was reading a picture book and she was daydreaming. She was actually thinking about a time when she was younger and living in Sussex and how she had just gotten off a train from a trip to London and her feet hurt. So she took off her shoes and walked home. She was reminiscing about how it felt to take off her heels and how the road felt under her stockings as she walked home when her daughter Susan looked up from her book and said, "Why do you never let me walk down the road without shoes?"
Oh, my.
Oh, my God. I'd be like, Josie?
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 We gotta
do something about that.
We gotta go see Dr.
Go see a specialist now.
We're gonna go see a friend. So Cassandra, you know, questioned her and said maybe without knowing it, could Doris have been wiggling her feet out of her shoes when she was thinking of the story? Maybe her daughter picked up on it. That's probably what experts would say. But that's so specific.
That is so specific. Yeah.
Like, it would literally have to be that she was talking out loud.
Right.
And her daughter heard it. It really seems like her daughter, like, saw what she was remembering and was like, wait, why can't I walk down the street without shoes on?
Looked into her brain somehow. Yeah.
You get to walk down the street without shoes on. So that's terrifying.
That is terrifying.
Susan?
Susan?
Come on. I just can't.
One doctor she spoke to, his name was Dr. Spinelli, did carry out some tests with children as young as three. Goodness. Some tests with children as young as three that seemed to show that small children had considerable telepathic powers. He found that 3-year-olds did best of all, and the ability declined from then on until the age of 8, when the results, like those of adults, were about the same chance as guessing.
Hmm.
Dr. Spinelli found that the results were best when children tested together were the same age, and even better when they had the same IQ. His interpretation of the experiments indicated that telepathic powers come from the same source as ordinary thought, but that in young children, this ability has not been suppressed by learning yet.
Mm. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, like they haven't kind of, basically he was saying that these powers, the telepathic abilities, are sort of like externalized thinking that ceases to happen when the child learns that thoughts stay in your head.
Yeah. Yes.
Because when kids are little, they're just like, this is what I'm thinking. This is what's on my mind.
Sometimes it's an insult because they'll look at someone and be like, you're a weird size.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I used to call people pizza face when I was So like you just say what a thought comes in and you're like, oh.
Julia was also the queen of, if she didn't like a gift, she made it known. I don't know if you remember that. Mom has just told me that when you were little, if you got a present you didn't like, you're like, this is terrible, and like threw it down on the ground.
Like,
it
was really sweet. Want this.
And the person who got it for her was like, oh, okay. Well,
all right. Sorry, Uncle Dave.
She hasn't learned yet that you don't say everything that you
You have no filter.
Think.
Exactly. They still believe.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of energy at three. Like, I think that's the most energetic you're going to be in your life when you're
at three.
Yeah.
I believe it.
Unless you're napping and then you're dead to the world.
Then you're collapsed.
And then it's gone. But yeah, he said telepathy only strikes adults as odd or unusual because they have a strong sense of self-consciousness, a notion that our thoughts are ours and ours alone, but children don't think about that.
Right.
Like, we could have a thought come into our head and we know that that thought came from our brain. Like, we thought that thought. But, like, how do you know that you thought that thought? Like, we don't even know what a consciousness is. Like, the thoughts in your head don't have to come from you. And children don't subscribe to that at all because they don't care. They don't. They've never heard the word consciousness before. So they're just living their lives. So let's move on. We're going to go to ghosts.
Ghosties.
We're just talking about this. It's very much so known by people who believe in paranormal activity that children have a special ability to sense and or experience the paranormal. But it's really hard to research children's experiences of seeing ghosts because it's hard to be sure what it is a child is actually describing. Young children's language can be very vivid, but their ability to articulate their experience is so vague and can be so misleading. Cassandra actually gives a really funny example of a time that they were camping and her son Jack came running into the tent to announce that there was a panda bear outside.
Oh.
And she was freaking out because they were like a mile away from the zoo. So she actually thought a panda bear got out and she was like, I have to call the police. Like
this is actually
panda bear.
Possible.
And so she got out of the tent and was like ready to run. And it was a cow in coloring book, but he wasn't lying, he wasn't exaggerating. There was, it had like the markings of kind of a panda bear.
Sure. I
so in
see
his head there was a panda bear outside of the tent, so but it wasn't, it was a drawing of a cow in a book, but like the way he said it was like there's a panda bear,
right?
So you have to be very careful when interpreting what a child says they saw, because in their mind they saw it just now. And it was real, but it could have been something on TV a week ago, something they saw a picture of, or even something that they misinterpreted as something else.
You can't jump to conclusions.
Yeah. One of my absolute favorite phenomenon involving children is imaginary friends.
Yes. I love this.
Yes.
Because Lauren had lots.
Yeah. I had lots of imaginary friends. And judging by the woman who moved into our house on Seneca after us, possibly a ghost.
A ghost friend.
Either an imaginary friend.
Do you
or a
remember
ghost.
Any of your imaginary friends?
Yes, I remember the cat and the dog pairing named Lick and Buddha, who Julia remembers well.
Very well.
There was a dog named Lick and a cat named Buddha who danced around me and talked to me. Those had to have been actual imaginary friends, even though I remember vividly what they look like. But I don't imagine that I was seeing a ghost dog and cat, so I think I just had a really nice
But you do remember them, like, seeing them? Like,
I remember
with your
seeing
eyes?
Them in my bedroom, yes. Like, it was an orange, like, scruffy-looking dog, which is weird, because orange is normally a color to describe a cat, but it was an orange, scruffy dog.
Okay.
And then the cat looked like the Cheshire cat, I remember, but didn't have stripes or any weird coloring, like, was just kind of a chubby-looking cat, but was all gray with white at the tip of his tail. And they just danced around. Their names were Lick and Buddha. Like, what are those names? No, I was too young. I was like, there was a teacher at St. Thomas named Mrs. Buddha.
Yeah, I had her, but I don't know.
I think I was still too young, though, to have known that.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was Lick and Buddha. And they danced and sang songs to me. And I would come downstairs and be like, me, Lick and Buddha, have a show to perform for you. And the family was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And that was my life.
Here she goes again.
Here she goes. It's like, I'm going to sing part one. Buddha's going to sing part two. It's just and silent. Link's going to sing part three.
And it was complete silence when it was the dog and cat's turn. But I weirdly, yeah, that's all I remember. I don't remember the little girl that I apparently was always talking to, but...
But others remember you talking to her. Yeah. Well, studies have shown that 65% of children under the age of 7 have had an imaginary friend. And 1 in 5 of those children seem to have permanent imaginary friends, meaning it's the same friend with them for a number of years. Because yes, the I've thing is, that. Like, it's not weird for a kid to be like, I'm playing with my friend. Right. And then, like, that friend never shows his face again because it's their imagination. They're just doing a thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But 1 in 5 kids, is it 1 in 5? Did I say that? 1 in 5? Yeah. 1 in 5 children seem to have permanent friends. So it's the same friend over and over again.
See, that's interesting.
And studies also show this actually depends more so on the child's temperament than on loneliness.
Okay.
So it has nothing to do with like being an only child. Also, the proportion rises steeply among gifted children. Psychologists in the 80s, Dr. Lewis Terman, found that of 554 gifted children between 5 and 13, 72% of girls and 42% of boys had permanent invisible companions.
Mm.
And it could be that intelligent, creative children find that they have less in common with their contemporaries and find companions that they can create in their mind to be more satisfying. Yeah. Especially if they're like... way smarter, like they belong in a gifted school, like,
and they're bored,
and they're like, bored, especially around kids their own age, where it's like, I can't relate to you, so I'm gonna make up a friend.
Right. Who is my more my caliber?
Yeah, more my speed.
Yeah, you guys aren't doing it for me.
So a lot of mothers, especially back in the day, worried about imaginary friends. They thought that having them would suggest mental instability and that acknowledging them or pretending they exist would encourage the children to continue with their fantasy. But psychologists actually say it's not a bad thing and that you should encourage imaginary friends if your child says they have one. For children to grow up confident and with a sense of worth, they need to have all of their experiences treated with an importance that they themselves attach to them. So if it's so important to your kid that you acknowledge Jezebel, then like acknowledge Jezebel.
Yeah.
Like pretend she's real.
Make her or at a PB&J. Least,
like, yeah.
I get that.
Exactly. Like set a place at the table for her. Right. Like it's not, your kid's not crazy.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so when imaginary friends get really interesting is when they shart. Is when,
they shart.
It smells and that's
it
weird.
It reeks and it's weird.
Is when they start sharing information with children and the children seem to know things that they shouldn't or couldn't know because that makes it strange.
Creepy.
I'll be talking about that a little bit. Yeah.
So, for example, one woman in the book who's identified as Jan tells the story of her imaginary friend Jellot. So it's spelled J-E-L-L-O-T. And I believe it's Jellot.
Jellot.
But Jello. So
fancy French.
Jello came around when she was 3, according to her mother, and she went everywhere with her. And she said she even remembers holding Jello's hand and feeling the warmth just like she was holding the hand of a real person, which is why I was asking, like, you remember exactly what they look like? Yes. Because she even remembers, like, the texture of Jello's coat that she always wore. Oh, wow. Like, it's very specific.
It's like so detailed.
Yeah. One day, Jan was in the living room with her mom listening to a program on the radio. So this was like a million years ago when there was a knock at the door and Jan ran to get it. At the door was Jello standing there with a woman that she didn't know. And the woman told her Auntie Bay, who was the woman that lived down the street, had died. Jan turned to her mom in the living room and said, Mom, why has Auntie Bay died? And her mom told her not to be silly and they finished the program. But Jan insisted that Jello and a woman she didn't know said Auntie Bay had died.
Oh,
so after the program, her mom went to Auntie Bay's. She couldn't get an answer at the house. She asked Auntie Bay's neighbor if she'd seen her, and the neighbor said she hadn't, but she'd call Auntie Bay's brother. And later in the afternoon, the neighbor came over and said that Auntie Bay had died in the night and that they just went and found the body.
Oh my gosh.
There's no way that Jan could have known.
No.
Not even like Auntie Bay's own brother or neighbor didn't know.
Right.
But she said that her imaginary friend came to the door with some like random woman.
Which that's what's weird to me is like she didn't just say Jello. Her she's like, no, there was a woman with
there was a fucking weird woman. Jello it was like Jello brought this woman over
to say like, that
she
say
has
that
news to her. Yeah,
that's what like gets me.
So like that's where it becomes like, okay, there's no this way you could have known this and your imaginary friend told you this,
right?
Who's your imaginary friend?
Yeah, let's hear more about this.
Let's hear about that. But this is kind of interesting. Many people who identify as psychic have stated that when they were younger, when they were kids, before they understood their abilities, they had permanent imaginary friends that would tell them information.
Oh.
And it's their belief that these weren't actually beings, but it was their own mind's way of either telling them they had a gift or processing the information that was being given to them, that like that they were receiving. Yeah. And when Cassandra learned about this through an American psychologist, Dr. Keith Harari, who had psychic experiences himself when he was a child, she asked Jan, the woman who had that experience when she was little, if she had ever had any psychic experiences, and she said yes, she had. So that kind of lined up. And Jan then went on to have three boys of her own, and her youngest boy, Ian, ended up having a permanent imaginary friend named Andrix.
Andrix?
Andrix.
Okay.
It's a good name.
That is.
And Andrix was really interesting. I'll just tell you this because it's just like cool. But Andrix, one time Jan walked in and all of Ian's toy cars were out and all the hoods were up. And she asked, like, what are you doing? And he was like, I'm showing Andrix a car engine because he's never seen one before. And she was like, oh, really? And he was like, yeah, because when he was alive, they didn't have cars. They had carriages and they were carried by horses. And Andrix is like, her kid Ian is like three.
He wouldn't know that.
Yeah. Oh. He also at one point said, again, like 3 years old, said that one of his older brothers had gotten like a fountain pen and it kept disappearing. And he kept saying Andrix keeps taking it. And she was like, well, why would Andrix want it? And he's like, he's fascinated by it because he said he wrote with a feather.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, and it was like, man. He doesn't know what a fucking quill is.
He wouldn't know that people wrote with feathers.
So that was interesting, too. This is cool. This is we're moving off of that book. One thing I wanted to touch on today is demonic possession.
Always fun.
You see it in just about every possession movie. The Exorcist obviously being the most successful. The possessed child, which I think you'll probably talk about that a little bit as well, Julia. Now, the major belief is that children are possessed because it's the perversion of innocence, but it could potentially be because of a child's sensitivity to things that are considered not of this world. Like, they're just more sensitive and they're more open, and therefore they're easier to influence.
Yeah.
So, Reverend Tom Willis, he was a vicar in the Church of England, and he was one of the 10 dioceses of York, worked with the occult basically his whole life. He was an exorcist, but he didn't like to be called that because he said it brought about visions of black cloaks and fire spitting from his fingers.
Okay, well, I wouldn't have gone there, but...
Right. He was just like, it's too dark. Like, that's not what I do. It's too macabre. But he worked with the paranormal cases involving the church for many years and was actually contacted by the police for several possession cases as well. What the Reverend dealt with the most was poltergeists, actually.
Oh.
And something that is almost always a given with poltergeists is that there's a child involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Poltergeists are believed to be an electrical force that comes from a living person who is repressing great anger, but it can also be any emotions of any kind. And a child who doesn't know how to process emotions properly, this can sometimes cause a buildup and then a violent release of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it is. Like, there's no evil involved with a poltergeist situation. It's all natural. It's just something that we do not understand yet. And we don't understand, like, how it can be externalized.
Right.
And actually, most cases of poltergeist activity, according to the Reverend that he's worked with, have ceased with family counseling, not exorcism.
Whoa.
It's literally just that. Like emotion. Child and family counseling, like learning how to control your emotions and learning how to like get that under control is what causes the poltergeist to like
to manifest.
Cease. Yeah. So anyways, there are really fantastic chapters in this book that I wasn't really able to get to today. Chapters on the bonding between a mother and a newborn baby, more on that. There's chapters on changelings, past lives, fairies, the ability to see angels when they're around death, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It's a really great book. You should check it out. I mean,
yes.
There's a ton of books on children's psychic abilities and like the special sensitivity that they seem to have.
Right.
And it's, I think it's interesting because it's easy to kind of see both sides. Like, it's easy to be like, well, you know, children have a great imagination. That's right. Why they say this stuff. Or right. Children are always kind of looking around. And that's why it seems like they're looking at things that aren't there.
Yeah.
But there are also some cases that are just too specific.
No. They're right. Too bizarre. Like, it makes no sense. It seems okay. That they were given the knowledge. They would have said
something else if they just wanted attention.
Right.
But... yeah, to say stuff that no one else knows or to just be so off the wall. Yeah. And you're like, okay, he's not just.
Yeah.
And one of the things she said in the book, too, if you want to, especially you guys that have small children, if you want to, like, not necessarily experiment. That's a horrible thing to say about, like, with I your will. Child. I will.
I'll experiment.
I volunteer as tribute.
Yeah. but when they say things to you like that, like, you know, I saw grandpa, or when they say weird things to you like that, react as neutrally as possible and just be like, oh, really? What'd he say? Like, because if you say like, what?
Right.
Really? Then they're like, oh, that's a fun.
That got a reaction.
Yeah, that got a reaction. I'm going to say that some more.
Yeah.
They actually had a really cool Ghost Hunters episode like that. I think it was like season one or two. It was back when they actually went to houses that weren't haunted sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. They just went to like residential places and sometimes they're like, it's not haunted.
Nothing's going on.
As opposed to like now where everywhere they go is haunted all the time. And it's always a demon. Yeah. But yeah, they went to this house and like the second the team walked in, this little girl that lived there was like, mommy, mommy, are they the ghost hunters? And like all the activity centered around the little girl and they put two and two together. So every time she says something like that, the parents get excited and they're like, you saw where? Where'd you see the ghost? And she's like, ah, in my room. You know what I mean? It's like that then positive reinforcement. Then she starts going on a
story. Yeah.
So basically just like log everything your child says that's strange, but like try not to like give too much of a positive reaction. I mean, don't be like, don't say that, that's wrong.
Yeah,
right.
But just like saying, as neutral as possible. Be like, what did really? He say? Oh, what did he say?
Interesting.
And then like take note. And then you can walk away and be like, oh my God.
That was insane. Yeah, have the reaction later.
Yeah.
That's a good idea now that Josie is talking more. Yeah. Start to really pay attention to what she says.
Right. And I do need to be careful because she's at the perfect age where she will be like, she's watching for my reaction. Mm-hmm. Which is why it was so pure before.
Yeah.
And really scared the crap out of me is because I was like, she's one. Like,
yeah. How is she doing this?
She can hardly sit.
She can't like, manipulate.
Or walk.
Right. Yeah. She's not going to like calculate like her next move.
Right. How do I get mom to
how
be
do I
like,
get mom to be very excited to hear what I have to say?
Yes.
Anyway, so that was my psychic children spiel today.
That was
I
awesome.
Hear about mm-hmm. Some,
I want to read that book.
Child yes. Murderers. That's all the time we have this week for Keep It Weird. Sorry it was all me talking, but that's just the way the cookie crumbled this time. Next week, we'll be back with part two, and Lauren is going to tell us about some children who murdered. It's rough. And Julia is going to be talking about spooky children in movies and just why we are so darn scared of them. Tomorrow, we're going to be at the May Market at Teapop in North Hollywood, and we want to see you. We're going to be recording interviews with just about anyone who wants to be on the show, and we want to hear about your creepy, spooky, weird experiences and your paranormal theories. We'll also be selling some merch, giving out candy, and having a t-shirt raffle if you want to win a free t-shirt. Follow us on social media at Keep It Weirdcast across all platforms. Check out our Patreon page if you want to find ways that you can donate to the show to get newsletters and bonus episodes. You can find that at www.patreon.com/keepitweirdpodcast. Check out our Etsy page if you want some sweet merch. www.etsy.com/shop/keepitweirdpodcast. As usual, thank you so much for listening and for continuing to support our show. As for a sign-off today, I'm going to leave you with this little nugget of wisdom. Kids say the darndest things. Or do they? We will see you next week, and keep it weird.
Beep, boop, bop.
Oh, good.
Taking note from Aunt Ashley.
Good boy.